Penguin Random House Audio presents Mr. Magic, a novel by Kirsten White, read for you by Rebecca Lohman, with the acknowledgments read by the author. To everyone who comes to me with hungry eyes and furtive desperation, whispering, "What's it like after you leave?" Your favorite childhood television program feels like a fever dream. You don't remember it at all until I start humming the theme song. And then, oh, I can see it in your eyes. That wash of images, ideas, feelings. Because that's what you remember. Not the title of the show. Was it Mr. Magic? The Magic Show? Magic Time? Everyone will tell you something slightly different. Not any of the plots or individual episodes, not even the names of the 6 children who were as real to you as your own friends. You only remember how it made you feel. The excitement when those kids stood in a circle in that featureless black room, said the magic words, and then threw that ephemeral cape up into the air. The terrible, delicious tension as you watched it drift down, impossibly slow, waiting, hoping, always with the strangest undercurrent of fear that maybe this time it would fall straight to the floor, nothing special or wonderful revealed, the magic lost. And then a release of breath and clapping as the cape elegantly defines the sudden figure of Mr. Magic himself. He's an impression more than he's a man. Top hat, looming presence. The black background coming to life with just a splash of red on the underside of his cape. What did Mr. Magic look like? He was tall and enormous. He was slight and lithe. He didn't have arms or legs. He was all arms and legs. He was a person. He was a puppet. One thing everyone agrees on is that we never saw his face. But don't you remember? You saw it once, didn't you? Did you? The one exception to our failing memories of the show, the theme song. You still know it, all these years later. Go on. It's right there. I'll start. Take my hand. Stand on your mark. Make a circle in the dark. Close your eyes and wish with me. Keep them closed. And now we see Magic Man, Magic Man, Magic Man. He's here for me. Doesn't it feel good to sing it? To have the magic back for a moment. The magic that was always there for you, that always worked. Until the day it didn't. Across the internet, you can find people who swear, and this isn't possible because the show wasn't broadcast live, that they saw it. Saw the episode, the cape fell and hit nothing, and then saw little Kitty, the smallest of the circle of friends, scream. You didn't remember it was called the Circle of Friends until you heard it just now. And it feels like a puzzle piece settling into place, doesn't it? That circle, those friends, your friends. Some swear they saw Mr. Magic disappear on the spot. Some swear they saw the sets crumble to the ground. Some swear they saw the whole place catch on fire. The fire took place later, after the show ended. Obviously, none of the people posting their vivid memories actually watched anything violent on their screens, but their spongy kid minds filled in that gaping darkness, that absence where Mr. Magic had been, where the magic at last failed. But that's the thing about childhood memories. We can't trust them. And in the case of Mr. Magic, we can't verify them either. Try to look up any version of the title on YouTube. It's not there. You can't find copies, bootleg or otherwise, anywhere. So you remember the show, but you don't. absent recordings or scripts, or literally any ephemera from when it aired, I've got the next best thing. The Circle of Friends. Back together at last. 30 years after tragedy shut down production and they were flung out of their loving magic circle and into the real world, whatever that meant for them. Some were easy to find, excited to reminisce and reconnect, and some were deliberately impossible to track down. But I have a little magic up my sleeve. It's the television reunion you didn't know you needed. And now that you're humming that song, trying to figure out if you ever did see Mr. Magic's face, thinking about how those kids felt like your best friends, now that you're remembering, you've never needed something quite this much, have you? Me neither. And so, dear friends, at long last, it's magic time. 1. The thing is, the doors were open that morning. Val knows, she knows, that waking up to find both doors of their sagging cabin opened wide to the world is probably only because Dad wasn't sleeping well, and that she should tie a bell to his foot before bed tonight, just in case. But an open door is an invitation, she whispers to herself. And she keeps the doors to their cabin firmly closed all the time. She'll have one of the ranch hands rig up some sort of lock system up high where Dad won't be able to reach it. That'll fix it. She can stop worrying. She doesn't, though. She worries through the morning writing lessons, worries through lunch with the camp full of awkwardly pubescing little delights, worries through the early afternoon group activities, more writing, cleanup. All her favorite things, especially the cleanup, knowing parents are paying a small fortune so their daughters can spend the week doing the chores Val hates most, are eaten up by the worry. By late afternoon, she's mostly shaken it off, though. Sometimes an open door is just an open door. It doesn't have to mean anything. One of the girls, Lola, freckled and sunburned and wonderful, raises her hand. Miss Val? You know where the bathroom is, Val answers. You don't have to ask when you need to go. It's almost time for pickup, which means she needs to get Poppy from the goat pen. The other 5 dusty and happy and tired campers are here with Val, finishing up in the stables. No, Lola giggles shyly. It's not that. Do you have any kids? An image flashes in Val's mind. A girl even younger than these, her brown hair forever fighting to escape messy pigtails, with eyes so blue they break her heart. Val smiles. Not yet, but I know there's one in my future. How? Another camper, Hannah, asks, wrinkling her nose beneath smudged glasses. Val resists the impulse to clean them for her. Independence is part of what her camps promise, even if it means dirty glasses. Val's been running the summer programs for Gloria's Ranch since she was 20, and they're the absolute highlight of her whole year. Val shrugs. I've always known. But aren't you getting too old? Val lifts an eyebrow. Lola scowls and elbows Hannah, but Val shakes her head. No, it's okay to ask questions. Questions are how we get to know the world. And the answer is, I'm not too old. Not yet. Her heart ticks like a clock, but she still has time. Val's belief in her blue-eyed girl is as solid as her belief in gravity. The when and the how are questions she doesn't let herself ask. It's easy not to ask questions. Take the question, put it behind a door, close the door, leave nothing open. She is aware of the hypocrisy of always encouraging her students to ask questions when she denies herself the same freedom. But there's a whole door in her head just for the cognitive dissonance of do what I say, not what I do. Do you have a boyfriend? Lola blurts out, and suddenly this interrogation makes sense. Lola's father finds excuses to linger at every drop-off and pickup. Only when I want to, Val answers. Sometimes.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?